Welcome to the Code Newbie Podcast, where we talk to people on their coding journey in hopes of helping you on yours. I'm your host, Saran, and today we're talking about how to code without typing with Serenade co-founders Matt Wietoff and Tommy McWilliam.
So, you know, I tried a bunch of different ergonomic setups. I saw a bunch of doctors. You know, I even read a bunch of like self-help books that people were recommending. I looked at a bunch of dictation solutions out there. None of these things really worked for me and got me to a place where I could be productive again.
If you have a question for Tommy, don't miss the Ask Me Anything session he's hosting on the Code Newbie Community Forum. Just head to community.codenewbie.org and you'll find his thread on our homepage, and he'll answer you directly in the comments. That's community.codenewbie.org. In this episode, they talk about how Matt's repetitive wrist injury started to derail his coding career, how they needed to invent the accessibility tool, which one of them literally needed to help build the tool itself, and what staff they used to build it. After this. Are you looking to connect with a diverse audience of developers? Look no further. You can partner with us here at the Code Newbie Podcast, and we'll help get your message out to our incredible listeners in an ad just like this one, led by me, your host. Contact us by emailing sponsors@codenewbie.org. Thanks so much for being here.
Thanks for having us. We're really excited to be here.
So before we get into Serenade, let's have you both talk about your own coding journey. Tommy, let's start with you.
I started coding for the first time in high school. I was a big fan of this show called BattleBots, which was the show where robots used to go into this ring and try to like fight each other.
They better be ready because the box is locked. The lights are on. It's robot fighting time.
And I thought that was so cool. And there were a couple students at my high school who were starting a robotics team. And I thought, this is going to be amazing. It's going to be just like BattleBots. Turns out it was nothing like BattleBots. It was building them out of Legos and having them drive around a little course. But it was still really fun. And so our high school didn't have any programming classes. And we pretty quickly realized that we needed somebody to actually learn how to program the robots so they could move around the track. So I just sort of took it upon myself to learn how to code that way.
Wow.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. The robots were programmed using this language. It was similar to C, kind of like a subset of C. It was pretty simple because, you know, the robots didn't have a ton of complex logic. It was sort of like, you know, drive forward for 5 seconds, then turn right, and then drive forward for 7 seconds. So it was sort of a great way to learn how to program. It felt very tangible and really approachable.
And Matt?
I think I started programming in middle school. It was just, I wanted to make some websites and a computer. The computer teacher there gave me like a JavaScript book and an HTML book. In high school, I also did the robotics team. Then I also spent some time, I don't know how I got started on this project, but building this balancing robot. I didn't really know what I was doing, but I had like a lot of help from just random people on the internet, like either, you know, people who have built similar things in the past or even just the people who made the parts. So it was introduced to a little bit of C programming then. Then went to school for engineering and then realized, it's really the software side of things that I'm really excited about and switched to computer science then.
And what did you do right after school?
So I joined Quora, working on their machine learning team. The main project that we were working on was write algorithms that could recommend answers we thought you'd be interested in reading and questions we thought that you'd be able to answer.
Tommy, what about you? What did you end up doing after school?
I also went to Quora right after school. That's actually where Matt and I met.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, we joined right around the same time. So I started off as an engineer on our mobile team. When I was in college, I taught a few classes there in undergrad that were focused on mobile development. So iOS development, Android development, and mobile web development as well. So I really liked the mobile stuff. I thought it was really fun to be designing for a smaller screen. And my desk was always full of all these different gadgets so I could test the app across a bunch of different devices and screens. And so I really thought that was cool to see my app running on a bunch of different types of phones. So I joined the mobile team. And then I built out some early versions of Quora's mobile apps, from their iOS app to their iPad app and Android apps. And then from there, I switched into doing engineering management. So led a few different teams, including that mobile team. I worked on a team that we called our growth team. So this was a team that was focused on getting more people to read Quora for the first time, helping people write their first answer and discover good questions to answer. And then I also led a few different teams that were focused on developer tools. So basically, we would build tools that other engineers at Quora would then use to build out their products. So you can think of that as building out some libraries that somebody could use to build out their web product or some infrastructure that a machine learning engineer could use to build and train their models.
And Tommy, I understand you helped create the first class on mobile development at Harvard with Professor David Malan, who was actually on our show in the past a little while ago. Can you talk about that experience and how you went about trailblazing that course?
Yeah, absolutely. So when I was in college, I worked with David Malan a lot. He's the professor of our intro class called CS50. So I was one of their head teaching fellows there, helping to organize, you know, problem set grading and midterm grading and hiring other teaching assistants. So we worked on CS50 a lot together. And then I think it was my sophomore or junior year maybe where, you know, CS50 was great, but we wanted to do more and create more course content. So this was back when iOS development in particular and Android development were really starting to take off. And so we wanted to capitalize on that momentum and build out a course that was focused on software engineering with a focus on mobile. The only problem was at the time, neither one of us knew all that much about mobile development. And so we said, okay, let's spend a bunch of time learning iOS and Android development, get really good at it, learn what the best practices are, and then let's create a course based on that so that other students can do the same thing. So it was honestly a lot of fun. I think being able to dive really deep into the mobile space was great. And I think a lot of students were really excited about this course because, one, I mean, David's great. He's a phenomenal teacher.
He's amazing.
Yeah, he's so, so great. And I think what people really wanted was a more engineering-focused course. Many of the courses at the time they're very theoretical. They're sort of focused on more of the math behind coding and less about, you know, how to use version control or best practices for designing code. And so really wanted to build a course that was focused on that, using mobile as sort of a lens into that world. So yeah, that was really a lot of fun. It was a great course. I think it still exists, which is great.
So let's get into Serenade itself. Matt, let's start with you. Can you tell us a little bit about what led to the creation of this tool?
Towards the end of my time at Quora, I was working on a different machine learning project, and you know, I started getting a bunch of wrist and neck pain. And in the past, you know, every few years, I'd sort of get this from typing too much, and there was never really a ton of urgency. I could always just get a prescription to get physical therapy, and things would go away. But you know, this time around, it just didn't. Basically, it was this class of injuries called repetitive strain injuries, and you could think of things like carpal tunnel or tendonitis, and you know, so it was one of those, and it just made it really hard to be productive, and it got to the point where, you know, 20 minutes of typing I would be in pain very quickly. You know, the company at the time was great. They were saying, look, like, you know, if there's any solution out there, we're happy to pay for it. So, you know, I tried a bunch of different ergonomic setups. I saw a bunch of doctors. You know, I even read a bunch of like self-help books that people were recommending. I looked at a bunch of dictation solutions out there. None of these things really worked for me and got me to a place where I could be productive again. One of the things I kept hearing was, you know, typing 40 hours a week is just an inherently unnatural thing to do. And you know, the real ideal way of getting rid of this pain was just to stop typing or just pick a different career. And, you know, I was not alone. There was, I had a friend who, you know, his company paid a typist full time to type for him.
Oh, wow.
Programming. Yeah. That worked about as well as you would think it would work, which is to say not at all.
I was going to say, that doesn't sound like that would work very well.
It's crazy. Some of the lengths that people have gone through just to start working. And you know, after working on this project for a while and hearing lots of stories, it's really inspiring what people have done. So I decided that I wasn't going to be productive, that, you know, I should leave and focus on this problem. And you know, this was my passion and my livelihood and my career, and no disability should really get in the way of people following their dream.
Mm. So how would you describe Serenade? We kind of kicked off this interview by saying that you're going to code with no hands, which I don't really know how that works or what that means. Can you talk a little bit more about the product itself and how does it work?
It's certainly a new way of coding. You know, there's not really a ton like this out there. And you know, when you think about coding, it hasn't really fundamentally changed for the past several decades. You know, we're still sitting at a chair and pushing buttons. That's how most of code is written at the end of the day. So the way Serenade works instead is, rather than typing your code at a keyboard, you'll describe the code you want to write with voice. So I could say something like, create a function called hello, print hello world. And Serenade will listen to me and understand, okay, I'm in a Python file. I just heard this description of code. let me translate that into valid Python for you. So that way you're not dictating all of the code. So if I'm writing Python, I don't have to dictate def, left paren, right paren, colon, new line, indent. Right, I just sort of describe at this higher level what I want the code to do and what I want the code to look like. And then our product is what translates that into actual syntactically valid code.
That is really fascinating. Tell me a little bit about the technology that goes behind that. What are some of the tools that you're using to make that happen?
So there's a few different moving parts there. So the first part of Serenade is the desktop application that you download. So this is using this technology called Electron, which basically makes it really easy for us to make the app work across Windows, Mac, Linux, basically any operating system a developer might be using. And so the languages we use there, it's mostly TypeScript. There's a little bit of C code in there as well, but mostly TypeScript and React for that part. So that app you'll download and you'll run it, and that's going to, you know, basically listen to your microphone and stream the audio to our speech engine. So this speech engine is very similar to something like the Google Speech API or the voice recognition part of Siri, but ours is designed specifically for code. Since, you know, when you're coding, you're saying a very different set of words than you might be saying to Siri or Alexa. You're probably not saying, you know, import or enum or adder to Siri. And so, you know, the accuracy on those types of words won't be particularly high. But with our speech engine that's designed specifically for code, it's basically designed to recognize those coding words and words you're probably going to say when you're explaining what you want your code to do. So that's using some open source machine learning frameworks. It's mostly written in Python and C++. And then the last part is this natural language processing layer. So once the speech engine says, here are the words I heard you say, it passes us off to this natural language processing part that says, okay, here's some set of words. Let me translate some description of code into syntactically valid Python or JavaScript or Java or whatever language you happen to be using. And similar stack there. We'll build the models using Python, and then we'll serve those models using C++ because C++ is really fast and we want the product to be really responsive. And so we sort of lean towards performance there.
Wow, that is super impressive. Is your company looking to connect with a diverse audience of developers? Look no further. The dev community is the go-to destination for developers to learn, connect, and support each other. You can share your message with the 15 million developers that visit every single month by using our powerful native advertising platform. To learn more, visit dev.to/advertise. How did you all work together? What were your individual roles in building this?
What's great is that Matt and I have really complementary skill sets. So, you know, my background is mostly in sort of developer tools, which ends up being sort of a full stack, maybe a little bit more towards the infrastructure type stuff. So I worked on things like the initial version of that desktop application, some of the sort of initial pieces of the infrastructure and server setup. And then Matt's background is all in machine learning. So he built the first version of the speech engine. He built the natural language processing layer. And so, you know, together we could sort of combine those skill sets to build the entire product.
And I guess at the start, you were writing most of the app too, so that, you know, we could just get a version of Serenade up and running that I could use to just further work on Serenade.
Tell me about the emotional aspect of potentially developing an injury like, you know, carpal tunnel and things that make it difficult for you to type and use your computer. What is that like emotionally?
It's pretty scary. And there's this other like issue, which is that, you know, sometimes these things can be induced by stress. So, you know, if you get an injury and then you become more stressed because, you know, what if I lose my job? It just sort of can become this sort of self-perpetuating thing. So it was definitely really hard. And starting off, you know, it was really unclear whether something like this could even work. So, but, you know, I think eventually we got to some place where, you know, we had something, once we had this initial version, it was a little bit more clear, like that this is something that we can work in. We just have to give it time. But there was a point in time where, you know, even when I talked to friends about this, they would kind of feel sorry for me that, it seemed kind of like that we're doing this out of desperation.
The most common thing we hear from people in our community and people who are using Serenade now is that they just hit this wall. You know, sometimes you could be at your job and things won't be going well, and you can say, well, okay, maybe it's time to switch companies, switch teams, switch roles. But when you have some sort of injury, you know, none of that's actually going to help, because whether you're a front-end engineer or a back-end engineer, if you can't type, you know, you still hit this same
that's
wall.
It.
Yeah. And so that's something that's really important to us, is giving people an option. And if this injury happens, or even if they're starting to develop it and they want to prevent it from getting worse or prevent it from happening at all, we really want people to have an option so that there's not just this wall that they hit and say, that's it, I'm stuck. They have something they can turn to and be just as productive, if not more productive, than they were when they were using a keyboard.
Do you have a sense of how prevalent this problem is, specifically in front of the tech community? I know we talk about it a lot. I've definitely heard a lot about it, and people either developing it or being scared that they're going to. But do you have a sense of just how big of an issue this is, how big of a pain point this is for people?
I think it's a lot bigger than a lot of people realize, and it's only getting worse. So early on, when Matt was, you know, talking to a bunch of physical therapists, and we're out in San Francisco, and you know, many of the physical therapists that we talked to said all they do all day, every day is help engineers with carpal tunnel injuries, because, you know, maybe they've hurt their wrist or neck or back, or there's a lot of different injuries you could get that makes typing at a keyboard or clicking on a mouse really, really painful. So it really is this problem that, you know, a lot of people might not realize how big it is, because if you get some sort of injury and there's no solution out there, you know, the last thing you want to do is talk about it if you know that there's no solution.
True.
A lot of people are sort of silently suffering and pushing through this pain, which oftentimes just makes the pain worse if you're pushing through it anyway. So yeah, we think it's really important that people have this option. And one other thing too is that this is only getting worse. You know, as more people are spending more time on mobile devices, they're significantly less ergonomic than a laptop keyboard.
Mm.
If you're typing on a phone all day, that might injure your wrists even more quickly compared to typing at a perfectly ergonomic desk and chair with a split keyboard and a wrist brace and all of those things.
Yeah, I mean, I see the preventative stuff all the time. Like I see, you know, people will like tweet or post on Instagram their home office setup, and I see all those ergonomic keyboards and those chairs and everything just looks so fancy. But yeah, I never thought of, you know, once you get it, like what do you do then? You know, there's kind of not much to fix it at the other side.
And I think what's cool about just removing the keyboard entirely is it actually gives you so much more flexibility in how you work. You know, we've had people who write code with Serenade, and they'll sit on their couch and project their code on their TV and just code entirely with voice from their couch because they don't need to type anything. Or even, you know, there was another person we talked to who had a projector, and they would project their code on the ceiling, and they would just be lying in bed looking at their code in the ceiling and coding
cool.
with voice. Yeah, so it's cool that, you know, you're not really tied down to these super crazy ergonomic setups when, you know, the whole point of those setups is to just make it okay to type. You remove the typing from the equation, and suddenly, you know, work starts to look very different.
So one question I have for you, Matt, is because of your injury, you basically needed Serenade to build Serenade. How did that work?
Yeah, you know, we got that initial version working. I think for a long time, it was something that I could use because I knew how it worked. But if you gave it to somebody else, you know, it would be too complicated, or there might be some bugs that they didn't know about. And I would know even what was done and what wasn't, so I could kind of work around those things. So yeah, there was a certain point where my productivity sort of like grew because, you know, Serenade got better. So then I was able to get more stuff done and work on Serenade some more. And then, you know, we kind of went from there. So yeah, I've been coding by voice for a pretty long time now. I think at this point, it's basically on par with a keyboard. There's some things that are faster. There's some things that are slower.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, I think we're on a track where it's going to be faster. One of our users has said, you know, he's challenged one of his coworkers. Okay, like here's a React component. Okay, we're going to race and see who can write this faster. And he just blows them away every time.
Wow, that's really cool. So that gets into my next question, which is about accuracy. How easy is it to use? How accurate is coding with Serenade? What is it like today, and where do you hope it will be in the future?
Accuracy is really important for us, because one of the things that makes voice or dictation a painful experience is when you say something, doesn't get it right, so you repeat yourself, and you're sort of like, you know, repeating yourself 10 times to a computer, and it's never getting it right, and then, you know, it's frustrating. So yeah, accuracy is super, super important. We hear a lot that people can't believe how accurate Serenade is, and the reason that it's so accurate is because it's in this really constrained domain. You know, when you're talking to Siri, you could be talking about the weather or who's hosting Saturday Night Live or some calendar event. And Siri has no idea what you're talking about. And it's this really wide range of things that it has to be able to understand. Where with Serenade, it's a much smaller domain. We know you're coding. You know, let's say you're in a Python file. You know, we know what variables exist in that Python file. We know what open source Python typically looks like and sort of the structure of code and what words you're likely to say. And so that helps us just be much, much more accurate than a lot of these more generalized speech engines. We've side-by-sided Serenade with something like the Google Speech API, and we're way, way, way more accurate, you know, maybe even something like 2x or something like that.
Wow.
Yeah, and it's really important.
So when it comes to accessibility, I want to dig into that a little bit more. This is, you know, I don't know if you necessarily think of it that way, but this is an accessibility tool, right? If you have any motor skill issues, whether it's because of carpal tunnel or a different reason, if for whatever reason you can't use your hands or fingers as well, now you have another option. What are your hopes for this tool in terms of its role and its place in the accessibility space?
So we see Serenade as this really critical accessibility tool. There's a lot of different reasons that it might be hard to write code, and not being able to type at a keyboard is really just the first one. And so we see this as a starting point. And ultimately, our vision is just to enable anybody to write code and not have any sort of disability or injury prevent them from following their dream and building something great.
I'm wondering, has building this app given you a better understanding of accessibility in general in tech?
Yeah, I think so. I think many of the reasons that people are using Serenade today, you know, we never even imagined it when we first built out this product. You know, we have some people who are using Serenade, you know, they'll use it only on Tuesdays and Thursdays because they'll, you know, they have some, you know, muscle issue in their wrists that if they type for a few days straight, it starts to flare up. But if they can type for a day and then take a break for a day and then type for the next day, that'll make them okay. We've also had a few people using Serenade who are quadriplegic or can't move, have full range of motion in their limbs. And it's amazing to see, you know, what accessibility solutions exist today. People are using things like eye trackers or, you know, other dictation software. And so I really think Serenade's role is helping people write code specifically, or there's, you know, a lot of accessibility solutions to write emails or Word documents. There isn't really something for code. And so we really just want to fill this really big gap that we've discovered in the accessibility space.
So can you code in any language with Serenade, or what are the use cases right now?
So right now we support around 10 different languages or so.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, the way that we've built Serenade is we've really focused on the platform. So rather than writing a bunch of voice commands just for Python and a bunch of voice commands just for JavaScript, we focused on sort of abstracting that away and building this more general platform. So it's really easy for us to just plug in a new language if we need to. So if some developer comes to us and says, hey, I'm writing all of my code in Rust or Golang or Ruby, we could say, okay, great, let's plug in support for Ruby and Rust to Serenade, and then they can go off and use that.
Coming up next, Matt and Tommy talk about what they would say to those who might be differently abled and possibly reconsidering learning to code. After this. So I'm wondering, what would you say to our listeners who are maybe thinking of getting into code, want to learn how to code, but they have a physical disability of some type that might make it a little bit harder? What would you say to them?
I would say first, don't give up. There are solutions out there. It's totally possible for this to happen. There are lots of people who have sort of overcome similar injuries or other types of disabilities and are really, really great programmers. So it's totally possible. I'd also say that the tools are only getting better. I think this is a really important space. I think more people are realizing how important accessibility is. And so the solutions that we're seeing for different voice products or other types of solutions, whether it be eye tracking or even VR or things like that, they're only getting better. And so I think it can be really intimidating to start because it feels like it's going to be really hard or the software isn't there yet. And definitely don't give up. We think it's totally possible. And companies like Serenade, you know, we really want to help. And there's lots of other people in the community who want to help as well.
Are there competitors? Are there other people who are trying to do a no hands required coding solution like this?
Yeah, there are a few different solutions that are similar to Serenade. You know, in particular, there are a few different products that are fully programmable, where you could register some word. And when I say a word like coconut, it could open up my terminal and build my project or something. So there's a few different projects like that that are really focused on, letting anybody totally customize their workflows or write their own custom voice commands using their platform. So I think what makes Serenade a little different is that we're more focused on, one, the coding use case specifically, and we're also focused more on this natural language, where we really want to make it easy for somebody just to describe the code they need and have that written. That tends to be just a faster experience if you're writing code. But yeah, I think as more people are realizing how important this is, there's different solutions popping up, which honestly we think is great. We want there to be options. We want there to be, if anybody needs software like this, that they're really able to get their jobs back and be productive.
Now, at the very end of our episode, we ask our guests to fill in the blanks of some very important questions. Matt and Tommy, are you ready to fill in the blanks?
We're ready.
Number one, worst advice I've ever received is, and Matt, we can start with you.
So when I was coming out of college, I heard a lot of strong opinions about what kind of company I should join. Some people said that joining anything but a small startup would ruin my career. And other people said, I should only consider the larger name brand companies. Looking back, I think there's no blanket correct answer for everyone. I think you just have to think about what you're looking for and what different companies offer.
Tommy, what about you?
I think the worst advice I've ever received is to give up too quickly. I think, when you're at a company, there's always going to be ups and downs, and persistence is really important and can lead to a lot of personal growth. I remember a few years ago, there was this reorganization of our engineering teams, and the team that I happened to be leading, some of those engineers were needed on other projects. So everyone's like, oh, this is so upsetting, like you should just give up and quit. But I didn't. I really decided to stick it out and, try that new team. And it was great. I think a lot of the preconceived notions I had were totally wrong. And I think by giving this a chance, I learned a lot, met a bunch of people I wouldn't have otherwise met. So if I had just given up too quickly, I wouldn't have been able to do that.
Number two, best advice I've ever received is?
The best advice that I've gotten is to use this thing called the 80-20 rule.
Yeah, that's a good one.
So yeah, that's this principle that, for most tasks, you can achieve 80% of the outcome with 20% of the effort. There's a subset that of the work that captures most of that. And usually that 80% is good enough. So, whether you're writing some new code or optimizing old code or even just like learning a new subject, you can be potentially 4 to 5 times faster or more productive if you just sort of figure out what that 20% is.
The best advice I've ever received is to, when you're given a problem, just to take a step back and think about principles. I think that I used to be the type of person that would tend to just try to jump right into a solution to a problem. But now, rather than asking myself, what does the ideal solution look like? I had a manager advise me to say, ask yourself, what properties would an ideal solution have? And this sort of forces you to take a step back and really think about the problem itself, where you're just jumping right to the first solution you think of, you can often miss things in the problem. So I try to think about things that way, and I think it really helps.
Number three, my first coding project was about, and Tommy, let's start with you this time.
My first coding project was this text-based blackjack game. It was written in this really old language called QBasic. I don't know if you remember that.
Oh, interesting.
I couldn't figure out how to tell if the player won or the computer won. So it would ask you, it would show you the hands after it said, did you win or did the computer win? And just sort of trust that you weren't lying.
That's awesome.
So I hope some casinos adopt that strategy. We'll see.
Yes. Oh, that'd be great. And Matt?
Mine was also a game. I think when my sister and I were kids, we made this game that where you're a moose that was trying to eat apples. So she drew all the animations and pictures in like MS Paint, and I, did a little JavaScript and had this moves picture, like follow your mouse and you could click on these apples to eat them.
That's so wholesome. So, I love that.
Yeah. It was a lot of fun. Every time I use JavaScript since then, I feel like, the language has changed like so much. And I think at the time I thought, I learned JavaScript, but now anytime I touch it now, I just think, there's so much to learn.
Number four, one thing I wish I knew when I first started to code is?
I wish I knew that you don't have to know everything. I think a really important skill when you're jumping into a new project or new code base or learning a new library is that you don't need to go in and read every single line of code and understand absolutely everything about some code base or some library to use it. You know, you sort of learn how to treat certain parts as a black box and say, okay, here's some function. I don't really understand what this is doing under the hood, but I understand what the inputs and outputs are. So let me just treat that as a black box and sort of make changes around it. I think it's a really important skill that can just help you pick up libraries and code bases much, much more quickly.
Yeah. So I wish I knew not to reinvent the wheel. So a lot of the projects that I worked on, you know, early in my career, I think I spent a lot of time writing code that I didn't need to if I had picked the right framework or the right library to use instead. I didn't really appreciate like how many open source projects were out there, and I just had to maybe search a little harder for them or figure out like what I needed to do to adapt them to the problem that I was working on.
Well, thank you so much, both you, Matt and Tommy, for joining us. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having us. This was awesome.
This show is produced and mixed by Levi Sharp. You can reach out to us on Twitter at CodeNewbies or send me an email, hello@codenewbie.org. Join us for our weekly Twitter chats. We've got our Wednesday chats at 9 p.m. Eastern Time and our weekly coding check-in every Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern Time. For more info on the podcast, check out www.codenewbie.org/podcast. Thanks for listening. See you next week.